You are listening to the official jQuery podcast, a weekly discussion with a key member of the jQuery community, along with a look at what's happening this week in jQuery. Bandwidth and hosting are provided by Media Temple. Media Temple is an award-winning web hosting company based in Los Angeles and founded in 1998. Media Temple is a fiercely independent, dedicated to innovation, and focused on improving our clients' experience daily. Find them on the web at mediatemple.net or at Media Temple on Twitter. Our podcasting studio is provided by BrandLogic Corporation. BrandLogic is the leading independent brand consultancy. For over 30 years, BrandLogic has helped world-class organizations develop branding solutions that deepen their relationships with customers, employees, investors, and other key audiences. Visit their website at www.brandlogic.com or at BrandLogicNY on Twitter. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of jQuery Podcast. We're at episode number 38, and Ray is at Redmond again this week, doing PDC stuff and a bunch of meetings. Unfortunately, couldn't make it this week for us. But in his honor, we are talking to John Rezik. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing good.
You been busy?
Been pretty busy, yeah.
Something about a couple of things you released, I guess, or I don't know.
Yeah, I got jQuery 1.4.3 out and jQuery Mobile Alpha 1. Got both of those out, released those at the jQuery conference here about almost 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah, yeah. jQuery 1.4.3 seems to be a big hit, as well as jQuery Mobile. I mean, everybody seems to be developing for their mobile applications using jQuery Mobile, and we're getting a lot of good feedback, a lot of good contributions. What do you think?
I'm pretty excited. Yeah, I've been very pleased with the feedback so far.
Why don't we talk about jQuery 1.4.3 in this episode? Can you tell us a little bit about this update?
Sure. So, I mean, predominantly it was a bug fix release. You know, this is the first one we've done since 1.4.2 back in February. And so there was a bunch of bug fixes. But we also snuck in some minor API improvements and some performance improvements as well. Probably the biggest change in the release, though, was relating to the CSS module. Mm-hmm. We went through, and starting from a commit from Brandon Aaron, he made some tweaks to how the CSS module works so that we could extend it a little bit better. I liked the idea that he had, so I went through and effectively rewrote all of the CSS module over the course of about a week or two. And then the result is the new CSS module. It's very extensible. It's a huge improvement over the old code base.
You said that 1.4.2 came out in February. Why did it take so long between this update and 1.4.2?
Well, it was more of a matter of just expediency, so to speak. Usually when we do minor releases, 0.1, 0.2, stuff like that, we typically look to see what the general response is from the community and if there are any showstopper bugs. In the case of 1.4.2, it was good. Like, there were not really any what I would consider to be showstopping bugs. So we're pretty content just to leave it as is. Of course, that gave us a lot of time to work on other things relating to the project, both planning, working on jQuery Mobile and getting the conferences up and running and all sorts of stuff. But obviously, we want to keep pushing and improving jQuery Core. So 1.4.3 came out here, and we're going to probably push for a 1.4.4 here probably within the next week or so.
I noticed an influx of contributors that are working on bugs and patches. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that? How did that come about?
So there's been some interest in the community and just in finding new ways to help the project. And so that's been one of the avenues that we kind of set up for them that worked out well is a new team dedicated to working through and triaging bugs. So they go through and look at all the new bugs that come into the bug tracker, look at test cases, try to reduce them, build test cases, and then do some prioritization based upon the bugs, you know, figuring out if they're, you know, if it's a super big problem, you know, setting them up as a blocker. If there's not a huge issue, you know, filing it accordingly. So this has been very helpful for the committers, because we can just go through this list and see exactly what needs to be worked on. And they already have test cases and they're just ready to go. So we can go in and then fix it up. And it's been nice.
So how many people are doing it?
I think it's about, I'd say about a half dozen guys.
Wow. So I know of about three. So Dave Methvin, Eddie Osobny, Colin Snover. Who else is on it?
I think Rick Waldron, Paul Irish, Adam Sontag.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about it. I there's probably some I'm missing. But yeah, they're the ones who are closing working on a lot of the bugs.
Great. Let's dive into 143 now. You mentioned in the blog post, in the release, that there's some modularity improvements. Can you talk about some of those?
So specifically, most of the modularity improvements are in the CSS module. And specifically, what we were shooting for was ways for people to snap in support for new properties. So, for example, if someone wanted to make it such that if you wanted to support one of the new CSS3 properties, and you wanted to do it in a way that works across browsers. For example, gradients. Gradients is one of the new things introduced. Now, Internet Explorer supports gradients, albeit in a very different way from the CSS3 gradients. So what you could do is you could implement a generic way of setting gradients and map it between all the different APIs that exist. Now, we do this internally already for opacity, for example, because, you know, opacity is used, you know, pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we take it and we map opacity so that when you set opacity or get opacity, we turn it into what is actually needed by the browser. So in Internet Explorer, we map it to the filter effects. So this has been very helpful because we're able to effectively make it such that there's no longer any browser-specific logic inside the CSS module. It can all be extensible in that way. So this has been nice. It's cleaned up the code in that module extensively. And it's something that people have already started to build off of. I saw one plugin called the jQuery Rotate plugin. It creates a rotate property that you can manipulate. And these properties not only work in a regular CSS module, but they also work in the animate method as well. So in the case of this rotate plugin, you can, you know, change the rotation of an element using transforms, and you can even animate based upon that as well. So it's pretty cool stuff.
Can you talk about, since, you know, you rewrote the CSS method, can you talk about the performance of the new method? How well does it perform?
So at least what we've seen so far, setting values is about the same performance as it was before. Getting values, though, has definitely seen a performance improvement. It's somewhere around, it depends on the browser. Some browsers it was the same, but it is usually around 11 to 14% improvement in the different browsers. So, I mean, it's a nominal improvement, but definitely one that we are very appreciative of.
You said we were talking about modularity of the CSS rewrite. Another thing you mentioned in the blog post was jQuery source is now more modular, that you can use script loaders like Lab.js mm-hmm. or Required.js. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So what we did there specifically was that the – because when you download jQuery, it's just it's one big script file. But if you dig into the source, you can see that we split it across many different subfiles. And these subfiles contain, you know, like Ajax and animations and CSS, etc. So what we found, though, was that when we wanted to try and reduce the dependency structure, or well, first of all, we wanted to understand the dependency structure between these modules. And in doing so, we realized that there were a lot of opportunities to reduce that complexity. So we went through and exposed some new properties and methods to make it such that you didn't have to necessarily build jQuery, you know, into a single file in order to make it run. So doing that yielded a jQuery that you could theoretically load piecemeal. You could load individual modules as you need them. However, you know, that being said, the chances of you actually doing that in an application are very low. And as I said, the chances of you actually getting tangible performance benefits from that is very, very low.
So it's, not recommended.
We did it primarily for a selfish reason, which was that we wanted to make it such that we didn't have to build jQuery, rebuild jQuery in order to run the test suite again. And the only way we could do that was to have it such that the modules didn't have to be built together into a single file.
I see.
So that was a big driving motivator for us, but it ended up greatly improving our development workflow.
It seems like Core has now consumed the jQuery metadata plugin into Core. So like now you can use data method to read HTML5 data attributes. Can we not set them as well using data, the data method?
So the design choice that we made in implementing this, so making it such that if you call .data test, it'll go through, and if a data property hasn't already been set in jQuery, it'll go and look and see if a data-test attribute exists on the element. If it exists, it'll pull in that value, and it'll only pull it in once. It won't keep pulling it in. So this is the pretty much the distinction that we make, is that we only pull this value in from the data attribute a single time, and we no longer manipulate in any way. We don't change that value if you change data at a later time, nor do we remove that attribute if you remove the data property. So it's just a simple, it's the bare minimum simplest way that we saw to make it such that you can easily pull in these data attribute values. Additionally, when doing that, we make sure that the values turn into something that is more usable. So like if you have a value of true, it turns into the actual Boolean true. If you have a number, it turns into an actual number. So that way you're not just having to deal with strings. So this is something that I think most users will appreciate.
Is that what you're talking about in the blog post with JavaScript objects? In the data?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that way you can actually put an entire JavaScript object or array into a data attribute. And when you call the data method on it, it'll actually pull that whole object in and then turn it into a real JavaScript object.
So there seems to be a new event for the data method as well. There's an additional change data event.
So this is a new event we introduced. It kind of builds off of the existing events that we had. We had set data and get data. We saw there is room for this additional one here. And what it allows us to do is that anytime you call, you know, .data, a name and a value, it'll go and trigger this event. And that allows you to write some really interesting plugins. So, for example, we just released the new data linking plugin. Mm-hmm. And this plugin actually allows you to make it such that any time a JavaScript object is updated via the data API, a resulting form is updated instantly. So that way you can hook a form to a JavaScript object and they will be intertwined. You know, so that updating one will update the other and vice versa. So that's some really interesting functionality that we thought was very compelling, and adding that API we liked.
You mentioned the data linking plugin. Recently, a couple weeks before the 1.43 release, the team released three official plugins, data linking being one of them, the others being templating, which we've talked a lot about, and globalization plugin.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all they are all written by Microsoft and donated to the project, and we're now hosting them on our GitHub account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we worked with the devs at Microsoft to make sure that the plugins were really good qualities.
Can you explain to our listeners what exactly an official plugin would be?
So typically, what we use as sort of a quality metric for determining what an official plugin is that the code for that plugin would probably be in core if it weren't for the file size associated with it. So, for example, we've had a plugin, an official plugin for a long time now, this the jQuery color plugin. It adds in the ability to animate colors to the animate method. And so this is something that a very small fraction of the total jQuery audience will use. But at the same time, like, we've written the code for you. So all you need to do is include that plugin to get the functionality working. So official plugins are just effectively a way for us to include this functionality in a way that developers have the choice of if they want to use it. Yeah, because we realize that typically the official plugins, things that are will be in a plugin, aren't going to be used by everyone. And if they are being used by everyone, then we should probably just put it straight in the core.
How does a plugin get considered an official plugin? Just whether or not it's good enough to be a core method, and if it is, if you look at the size, and if it's too big, it might be considered an official plugin?
That's a big determinator for us. Another big one is just that we like seeing when that plugin is being used a lot. So either when the plugin's being used a lot, or we think the functionality that it provides is something that we want to do anyway. So this is something that it's not completely clear cut, but it's something that we make a judgment call on.
Okay. So you don't want email saying, consider my plugin as official plugin?
Yeah, I mean, typically we go to you.
Don't call us, we'll call you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fair enough. Let's talk about traversing methods. There are a number of improvements to the traversing methods. How do improvements like this still come about? Like, how do you still squeeze performance out of this?
So we pretty much hit a wall with performance in the filter method and the closest method, because in order to make those methods faster, we needed functionality provided by the browser that it wasn't providing. Namely, we needed some way to take a CSS selector and see if an element matches that selector. So the problem is that most browsers, when they introduced the selectors API, which is the query selector all method, they did not provide a way to do that particular functionality. So I went to the browser vendors and I proposed this particular method. I wrote up test cases and filed bugs and talked with the vendors. And they went and they implemented it. And which is really great, because we're able to use it now in jQuery and get these really nice performance speed ups. So this is something that translates out into all your applications now. It'll be in all the modern browsers. I think it's in Safari, or sorry, it's in current Safari, current Chrome, Firefox 3.6, IE9. Yeah, so it's in a bunch of places. And like your users of that, users of jQuery will instantly get that benefit as a result.
So basically, to get this performance benefit, you need to go back to the browser vendors and tell them, this is slowing me down. You need to fix this. Here's a proposal on how to do that.
Yep, exactly. And so that's something we've been trying to get better on, writing up proposals and test cases for browser vendors to implement things that'll benefit us as a project.
So, yeah, it looks like a pretty good improvement in Firefox 3.6, Firefox 4 Beta 7, Chrome, Safari, and IE9. Yep. And so that'll affect the closest filter
Find? Closest filter. And so Find, what we did there is, so we haven't been using Query Selector all. We've only been using it when you query from a root element. From the document itself, not a root element. So we made a change there because the problem is that the query selector all method has some weirdness in it. It doesn't behave in a way that is completely identical to our selector engine or any library selector engine for that matter. So we went through and we made some bug fixes to the rooted query selector all method. And we landed those such that we can now use query selector all across all these browsers.
So let's talk about Ajax and the Ajax method. You provided a new property called ready wait. Can you talk about why people would use this property? What's it used for?
So this was introduced specifically so that libraries that provide script loading functionality, meaning that if they allow you to dynamically load, different JavaScript files, they can actually go through and delay the DOM ready event from occurring. So for example, if you imagine a script loader loads in jQuery, and then has to load in like three more files or something. What it can do is it can tell jQuery, hey, I've loaded three more things. Please wait until all of them are done. And when the ready event is done, then you can fire your ready event.
So basically,
this is nice.
It's basically like a document.ready for Ajax calls.
Roughly. So it doesn't tie into Ajax specifically. It ties into the ready event code. It can be used for when you're dynamically loading content via Ajax. So in that regard, it's going to be – like I know the functionality has already been integrated into require.js.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it'll probably be integrated into some other script loader libraries as well.
You talk about some changes to events. Bind and click have some shortcut methods. You can like now say bind, click, and then just say false to it to simulate a return.false in a more shortcut fashion.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that was just something really simple that we added. So adding in the false argument to bind and unbind allowed us to sort of make it this one use case that we saw really simple. The use case where people were just creating anonymous functions that returned false typically to prevent the default action from occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And so when doing that, they have to write all this code. When we just maybe we just brought a simple API, passing in just the Boolean false could be sufficient.
Will that work for live and delicate as well?
Good question. I'm thinking. I think it would.
Yeah,
because you're passing in the handler. The handler gets changed. I'm about 80% sure. I'd have to double check.
Cool. I stumped John. That's great. Okay. There was a number of changes to events and effects. Can you just talk us through those as well?
I guess there were a bunch of minor changes, mostly some tweaks to the API, making it so that you can pass in data to the event method. So like typically when you call like dot bind and say dot bind click some data and then a function, and that data will get passed into the function when it's called in addition to the event itself. And there was no way to do that if you called dot click with a function. So now I can call dot click with data in the function. We also did similar with the animation API. We had methods like dot show, dot hide, and those didn't have a way to accept easing. The only way you could specify an easing value was to call animate directly. So that was something else we fixed as well.
So you were saying at the top of the show here that 1.4.4 is close to being released.
We did the first release candidate 2 days ago, and we're hoping to do the final one. I think probably within maybe this weekend. We'll see.
You didn't release that on the blog though. That's just sort of a soft launch.
Yeah, I think we may just do one more release candidate and then do another, maybe do a blog post and then go live. I'm not entirely sure yet. We're getting good feedback either way, so I think we're pretty confident.
Where do people go to go test that? Go to Git or GitHub, I mean?
Yeah, we could. It's also up on the jQuery website. So if you just go to code.jquery.com/ jQuery-1.4.4 rc1.js. It'll be the current RC.
What spawned the decision to do a fast turnaround on this release?
I think at this point we just kind of want to keep a relatively, I wouldn't say rapid rate of release. I think we just want to keep maybe doing a release every like month and a half or so. So this is we just saw this as being a good opportunity to fix some bugs and get another release out here.
And when you got a bugs team doing triage, I guess you can really get the momentum going, huh?
Yep, absolutely.
So cool. So you want to stick around? We'll do another episode for jQuery Mobile that we'll release next week.
Sure.
All right. Well, in the meantime, see you guys later. Have a good week. See ya.
Take care.
Time to meet with jQuery.